Hey guys, and welcome to Script Blast, the podcast to teach you how to write better screenplays and write a better life. Today's guest is Profound Clark, musician, screenwriter, and founder of Storyteller Session, an online group where writers are paired with professional actors to see their stories brought to life at a live table read so they can get better feedback on their scripts. Profound gives us some awesome life stories, teaches us why collaboration is key, and how others can help us reach our creative potential, even as introverts. Community is everything. Now is the time to find your tribe. If you're ready to take your screenwriting to the next level, be sure to check out our private online community, Script Blast members. Get access to our weekly group Zoom calls and lessons, library of ebooks and worksheets, and make friends with other passionate writers just like you. Learn together at members.scriptblast.com and get your first week free. Now here's Hudson and Profound.
Cool. So Profound, welcome. It's great to see you. It's been a long, long time. It's been over a year since we've hung out. How are you doing?
Yeah, the pandemic does that. It's been a long time since I last saw you conversation.
I know. This might be the first one that I've done. Well, it is the first one I've done in a good many months. So the rest of them were like recorded early on and then released later. So we can actually talk with some authority on the last year of our experiences, and especially talking to you, because I've noticed how you've pivoted in this world with your writing and with everything that you're doing in a really cool way. So I want to get into all that.
Yeah. It's been an adventure. What 2020 did to me was say that I need people to survive, because I was about to lose my mind instantly.
Yeah.
I was talking about it last night in a session. Basically, at the beginning of all this, I was one of the early people that said, this is going to be a really long time.
Yeah.
While a lot of other people were still of the mindset that, like, oh, well, you know, a couple months or so on and so forth. And so it was just so lonely, because yeah. I was like, no, I'm about to be trapped in a room for, I think at the time, because it was March, early March. And then by the time I went and by the time I told friends to go get their stuff, because they're about to lock down. And I didn't think that we would get back until spring of this. Yeah, I said spring of this year. So when I was like, we're not going to get anything. Any semblance of normalcy until spring. And I was like, and that's being kind.
Right. Which you kind of heard from places, but I think, I don't know, maybe I'm an optimist. Maybe most of us were optimistic of like, well, it won't really be, you know, surely we'll figure something out. But it's interesting, because I think to bring it back to writing, a lot of writers are introverts. And so I think a lot of us were like, hey, we've got this. We have, you know, we're used to staying home by ourselves and connecting with our brains creatively. But I think we all quickly realized that there's a difference between having that choice and then no longer having the option to interact with other people, and just how quickly that got lonely. I think we underestimated the power of even acquaintances and bumping into random people at the store and just being around human beings and having those human experiences to tap into as writers, but also for our own mental health and everything. Do you consider yourself an introvert?
I wouldn't say that. I go through phases. There's times where I don't want to see anyone at all. And I spend like groups of times where I will literally go through where I'm like, okay, I'm just going to lock myself up in a bunker and be fine. And so I can be fine isolated, but I'm also, you know, I've done before about music promoting, putting on events, and I like to be around groups of people. Cause I think that, to kind of talk about like what's kind of misunderstood about writers is that, and what's kind of misunderstood about introverts. Introverts are thought of as people that want to be alone. It's just introverts really are people who don't have the energy to like, to interact with people in certain kinds of ways.
Yeah.
So like an introvert can go to a party and be to a certain extent, if they can be left alone at the party. But like, it's weird being the person who's left alone at the party a lot of the time. So so that's why introverts generally aren't out there in that way.
Yeah,
writers are people who literally need people to do our jobs.
Yeah.
Like, we're always pulling off of the knowingly or unknowingly, the interactions of between us and other people, the movement of the world. unless you're writing about the dust mites in your living room, you have to get out of your house.
Yeah. And the just kind of empathy meter, you know, I think what we're seeing over the past year in very extreme ways in some circumstances is we hop online and we are in kind of a circle of influence that is the same thing. And we're not really breathing outside of our circles. Like conversations I've had, like with extended family and parents and stuff who just say the craziest things. And I'm like, where did you get that from? I would have never heard that out of your mouth 2 years ago, but I think we're just in these circles, and there's something about bumping into people and getting out into the world and having different viewpoints, which we thought the internet was going to be the solution for that, of those viewpoints. And it ended up being the opposite in a lot of crazy ways.
Yeah. I think that's interesting. I feel like, you know, as you know, I'm a gamer, and you know, you game with who you game with. Yeah, I think that when the internet started coming up, you kind of were like, oh, we're getting out there more. But like, if you go back to like AOL days, that kind of signaled it pretty early. It's like, these are the types of chat rooms that you want to walk into. Right. And so, yeah, the internet is just a bunch of boxes that you can just crawl into and live in. And yeah, so you don't have to see other people. Whereas the real world is, it's, you can't avoid mingling. Now, if you live in a very small town, you can be surrounded by people who like the energy or the vibe of that small town. So it becomes its own little bubble.
Yep.
And if you don't get out, whatever. But if you live in a major city, you can't go to a store without running into six people that are nothing like you.
Yeah.
And there's just a ton of value in that, which, yeah. So yeah, it's been a tough year for people who watch and who gain, you know, I gain a ton of value from strangers and new people, whether or not they know it or we talk or anything. So.
Right. Yeah. Writers are observers, and we don't have a lot to observe right now, but also, especially with film, it's a very collaborative medium. And I think a lot of stuff that you're doing right now, you've got like a writer's collaboration deal kind of going on, and then also the storyteller sessions, which I want to get into both of those things with more detail, you found kind of ways to collaborate even now and with your writing. And I wonder, because I know you have a background in music as well, is all of that kind of connected to you? Like, what is it about these art forms that draw you in? Is it the collaboration about it?
I was a really, it's funny. Like, music is funny to me because I loved collaboration, but I always wanted to be the boss, which is not a great position to be in, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think I became a front man of a rock band because as the drummer of the rock band, it felt like I had less political pull. So it's funny to think about, like, but I do know I work better collaboratively. Like, when I'm on my own, I can get stuck in whether or not I need to keep doing stuff. But if I have other people to pull along for the ride, or if I'm trying to motivate other people to get work done, I'm way more successful in my own work. So I think that's a big part of it for me. And I know that film in general was tough because I spent so much time in music that when I finally came back to film, because I'd put aside writing and tried to focus on one medium, and I came back to film, I was like, oh, I don't have anybody. And whereas music, I can write all the music myself, and I can arrange it, compose it, write the lyrics, do whatever I need to do with it. I learned all those things.
Yeah.
But that is just impossible in film. Like, you can, you need other people to make, you can, otherwise you're just writing books and waiting, and, or just, I don't even know what a director does without a writer. Right. So
right, yeah.
Like, you need cinematography, you need all these people. So yeah, like, I think the transition from music to film and feeling stranded in the way that I did made my compulsion for collaboration for tribe, it heightened it.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I need to connect to people. None of this works without somebody else. And then, so when I started to have people that I did connect with, I understood like the value of it. Cause I know what it's like to not have people to connect with.
Mm.
And it's been a really strong year for that for me, as far as connecting with people.
How do you find those people, or how do you find the right ones of those people? Because I know a lot of writers I'll get emails from who live just in the middle of nowhere. They're like, man, we don't have a film scene. I know that I need other people in order to create this stuff, but I don't know how to find them. How do you find those collaborators?
I mean, that is the thing the internet does help with a little bit, right? Like you have opportunities to reach out to people. I know that when the world was open in Atlanta, they had things like Eat, Drink, Be Indie, and there's events in major-ish cities all across America, at least, to where people are trying to connect, because I'm not speaking anything new. Everybody knows you have to find other people.
Yeah.
And so many different organizations try to create these events, be it the Blacklist, which was going on for a while and that stopped, but Eat, Drink, Be Indie for Atlanta, but the Atlanta Film Society just has so many types of events. And there are those events will tell you about the next events.
Yeah.
So meeting people is just another way to meet people.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you're in a smaller town, you just have to go out and look for it. If you listening to this podcast, you're going to hear all these voices. You're going to find out where to find those people. And that then it becomes the tricky part, which is how do you craft a little thing to say, hey, I exist in this world. Can you help me? Is there anything you can tell me about that I might not know about? And I think that's the biggest thing to me is wanting to know what other people are about, you know, because other people were worried is like, don't be selfish. Like, don't ask for something for yourself. Always ask something about somebody else.
Yeah.
But I promise you, learning something about somebody else, one, makes you a better writer. You always want to learn something about somebody else. But two, you're going to get to, it's a more rewarding path to what you want. Because even if you don't get the answers you're looking for, you're going to get some kind of an answer that maybe you didn't even know you were looking for.
Yeah, I'm totally surprised. I didn't realize until we had a movie coming out just how many film festivals there are. Like, not even in major cities, but small, tiny towns that have these film festivals, which are an amazing way to get to know people. And I think the other thing that a lot of people first starting out don't realize is just how much value comes from collaborating with other people that are just starting out. Like, you don't have to reach out to the person that's already made a million things. You could find, you know, the random kid at the local high school who edits YouTube videos, or the you know, doctor down the street that secretly wants to be an actor. I mean, like, you can find these people in your area that all it takes is some passion and some commitment. And that's the biggest thing is I'm getting older that I'm realizing is just how much people at your level, when you all rise up together, how many cool things. Like, I look back on people I met 15 years ago, and now we're all doing these cool projects and inviting each other in and are all kind of quote unquote more established, but nobody knew what they were doing 15 years ago, you know? And so you kind of have to be patient with yourself and give yourself time, but like, look for those people who are also just starting out that you can rise up with together as well.
Yeah. And the trick of it is, like, you have to figure out ways to learn your craft as well. And even if you find the local actor who's also starting out, they probably don't know how to do your craft. But the good thing is that the internet exists now.
Yeah.
There are so many, I spend so much time watching videos of these great teachers. They're probably great filmmakers as well. And they probably, you know, I've seen some of their work, and their work is good. But the art part is subjective, right?
Right.
But there's people out there that specifically go, here's the stuff to buy, here's the low end stuff to buy, here's how you could shoot. I remember watching a video, and I'll try to remember his name at some point in this podcast. I'll look it up. But he was like, here's how you make a video. Here's how you shoot a video all by yourself. And he wrote it, he acted in it, he shot it. He was like, here's everything. You make a movie all by yourself or whatever, right? And yeah, well, the craft part is available for you on the internet. You can figure that stuff out and you can learn more and more and more and more and more and more.
That's awesome. Yeah.
The other stuff is the collaborative piece. That, like, I completely agree. Find a bunch of people and get on the internet with them. That's all you learn your craft together and kind of build yourself up.
Yeah. So I want to talk about some of that, what that education is for you. But first, I kind of want to go back to the very beginning for you. It was film always a passion? Writing was always a passion in addition to music, and you just chose one or the other? Or where did all that start for you?
Yeah. I mean, I've been writing longer than anything else. Well, I guess I was told that I was singing before I was talking, which I don't know. I don't even know what that means. Yeah. Cause I'm still not that great of a singer. So yeah. Practice definitely doesn't make perfect apparently. but I've been writing since I can write. I remember writing a story on a really early computer called Three Ninjas, and then seeing Three Ninjas came out and being like, hey, that was I did that. and yeah, obviously they didn't steal my idea. Right, anything, yeah. But it was kind of cool. It was like, oh, I have an idea, and they had an idea. So it's like, it's out there, right? Like cool. I can create things that other people who are actually doing it are thinking about. How I ended up at, but you know, my dad was a musician, and which is its own like cautionary tale about what it's like to be a musician. And I was very scared of becoming a musician. Huh. And so I was writing a lot, but I had a real passion for music. I just love performing,
yeah.
You know, whether it was acting a little bit, which I try to avoid, like, I just try to stay away from acting now, but I've always loved performing. So that's kind of why I think I moved more towards music, and I put aside writing, but I've loved film forever. My brother is 8 years older than me. And so I was always watching whatever he was watching, and he was watching, you know, he got me into Monty Python when I was a little kid.
Yeah,
so like
yeah.
So his stuff is very niche film. And so that I was on a steady diet of things that other adults weren't really even trying to watch.
Yeah.
And it just had this appreciation, like there's this world that can exist for a small audience of people and satisfied like these people that have this very specific palette. I've just been hooked on that since I was very, very little. So
it's funny, cause I had a similar path of writing when I was young, moved over to music for about half a decade in my late teens, early 20s. And that like scratched that itch for me, the songwriting. And then, like you said, discovering performing, because I still haven't figured out, like being on set is amazing and shooting stuff and collaborating. And that's got a certain energy to it, but there's nothing that replaces that kind of live performance of music in film. It's the one thing that I still miss from that world.
Well, I'm excited about your late theater turn when you when you start directing your own theater pieces. Because because live theater is where it's at for this type of narrative storytelling, right? Like if you're really in it, trying to hold together a live production in theater is always tense. It's always exciting. The buzz of the people in the room, the trying to make sure we get all the costuming and all the stuff together, whatever.
And it's a little different every night, I'm assuming.
It's a little different every night, right? Yeah, I'm sorry. So yeah, not hearing that you're looking to get to scratch that that live itch, I think theater is going to be where you...
So you've done theater stuff before?
I'm a theater kid. Since I moved to music, I stopped focusing on any of that stuff.
Gotcha.
And then I stopped worrying, since I was like, I don't want to be an actor. I don't like the sound of my own voice. And so like, I was like, oh man, that's that entire job, it feels like. Yeah. So I kind of moved away from acting, but you know, a lot of the people in our community are theater folk. I have a lot of love for theater. I'll always have a lot of love for theater because it's really magic to put it there in every little performance, every little show is its own thing. You're giving somebody a unique experience, even if so many other people have experienced this in some way. That's the thing to me that film is different on, right? Like you make the thing and it just exists.
Yeah.
And it's whoever gets it, they're getting it the same way. They're experiencing it different because their lens is different.
Yeah.
But the lens is always going to change from person to person. At a live performance, you could have somebody that comes in a little bit later this time and it changes all these other things. I remember I came in more than a little bit late on a performance because I was backstage flirting or something and missed my cue by a lot. The stage manager's yelling my name from wherever. And the performers on stage just had to improv for like a minute maybe, which is a painful amount of time to do anything on stage that's not intended. And yeah, that crowd got something completely different because I'm an idiot. And so yeah,
that's cool.
I think you'd get a kick out of theater.
I actually, when I was a teenager, I did a little bit of acting and was doing extra work and stuff, but did a couple of plays at my high school. And I really embraced that side of it. So I would do things like we did a Twilight Zone story, the monsters are doing Maple Street, super cool story. And so I was the guy that got shot in it. And so without telling anybody, I brought in like this fake blood and like put it all over myself. And so when I got shot, I kind of like turned and everybody, you know, saw it or whatever. Like I didn't tell the director. I didn't tell that it was a tiny thing. I think it wasn't even for theater. It was for like English class or something. But like, I wanted to create like something that wasn't there, you know, or like I was in another one. What is it? A Christmas Carol. And I played Scrooge's nephew. And I have this line where the alarm goes off and I say 7 o'clock on Christmas Eve. And I was like, oh, cool. I'm going to like pull out this old pocket watch and like look at the time and be like, oh, 7 o'clock. I like added my own little thing to it. And then my pocket watch got stuck. And so I can't get it out. And Scrooge is like trying to feed me the line because he think I forgot the line. But yeah, there's a lot of energy there that's really missing in my life, I think.
Oh man, I love that you're the actor that other actors hate. So I remember in high school we did Othello, which I'm always saying that I lament that we did Othello in a mostly white high school. I thought that I was definitely going to be Othello, and then this other black kid came up and was like, "I'm brilliant," and I was like, "Crap!"
Yeah.
And then, where are you all this time waiting for Othello? Apparently,
yeah.
But the other kids in that production had a lot of issues with him because, you know, in high schools especially, you have like the group of people that just do all the things. They're the main group of kids. And here comes this new guy. And not only is he new, he performs differently almost every single time.
Huh.
And so they were upset because they wanted consistency, but he was good every single time. And it got different reactions out of them. It allowed them to play in different ways. And so the drama teacher, Mrs. Carey, at the time, she was like, no, you have to roll with it. He's doing his job. It's just not the way that you want it, but that's not how this stuff works. We're all giving our takes. We're all performing. Acting is reacting. React. You can't just expect it to be one way and go with that.
That's fascinating.
So that's you. You were the one who was trying to give the surprise thing that was going to cause them to react. That doesn't make you a screw up.
Yeah.
It makes you a different little bit of flavor that's added to the mix. And that's what's so great about theater, live theater.
So you had a lot of, I wanted to kind of ask about where you learned to write, but it sounds like you just had a ton of influences, both the film you're watching, the plays you were doing, that everything kind of influenced that.
Yeah. It's weird to think about where I learned to write. Cause again, I was writing from so young. I've just always loved words. I get in trouble a lot because I say like words matter, which really just means like, no, the thing you said doesn't mean what it means because you use the wrong words.
Yeah.
It's like, but you know what I meant. It's like, I don't, because I'm listening to the words you're telling me. It just makes me look like an asshole every single time.
Yeah. But
like, I really am like, no, that's not quite what that means. So I've just always loved words. And so I think when I was writing from at a very young age, I just was like, ooh, I have these like cool ideas or whatever, but I was always absorbing things. And like I said, I admired my brother so much and he wanted to be a writer. He was, you know, he was writing. And so I was like, oh, okay. Well, you're right. You can do this too. The writing part of it. Okay. I'll do the writing part of it. And so I was writing short stories. And then from there, I just kept building. And as I got older, the idea of like, oh, you can writing the stories for these shows or trying to create screenplays. And I think, yeah, my first screenplay I ever read was my brother's screenplay.
Oh, wow.
And I was just like, oh, this is just kind of cool. And so that's kind of what led me into this world when I started to try and write more and more stuff. And so I'd written a bunch of stories. I was working on some novels. I've written a bunch of screenplays before I got out of high school. And then I got into music and I stopped writing altogether. I kind of had to restart everything that I was doing. But
yeah,
so like my biggest influence as far as writing is concerned is definitely my brother.
Yeah, that's cool.
But through him and my love for like these niche art pieces that I was just like, oh, I can just write whatever's in my brain. It doesn't have to be like this other thing. Yeah. Okay. Let's try that. And that's kind of where I go.
Very cool. So tell me, we haven't talked about this yet, but you mentioned it briefly, this writing collective you're a part of called The Quad. Can you tell me how that came together and how it all works?
Yeah. So The Quad, so through Storytellers, which is a group which we'll talk a little bit about, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Where we invite a lot of different writers in to share work with a lot of different actors. And they're at all different levels. We have writers that are staff, whatever. But we at the end of all these sessions that we were having, we closed down the session part. And so no one has an obligation to stay, but I leave the room open in case people want to talk about the work or just network, because mm-hmm. that's a big thing, trying to connect people to people.
Super cool.
And so we would sit in there and four of us, I'm the fourth. Four of us were in there very often after the session, and we were just talking and talking and talking. And by this time, I'd already, me and Kendra Christel, who's a writer in there, one of the first writers that had signed up, we were talking about some things, and we agreed to collaborate on an idea that I had, which was this horror film, this female-centered horror film, kind of an ode to like the old cabin for slashers or whatever.
Yeah.
And so, and she was like, oh yeah, I love to figure out a cool way for people to die. I'm like, all right, let's, we can get together. And so we'd started writing together, and we had this idea. So yeah, so kind of it formed out of a strange like idea. We were all talking about this idea that was made out of us joking together. And the jokes built and built and built and built and built. And so Kendra was like, I think I'm going to write this. And she wasn't aware that Alex at the same time was like, I think I'm going to write this.
Neither one of them said that out loud. They were just started writing it.
Yeah. They were starting to like work on ideas for it.
Yeah.
Separate from each other. Cause it was just, you know, it's a comedy idea. We were joking about how a series would look. With this comedy idea, with this supernatural element thrown in the mix, right?
Cool.
And so she went off and was like coming ideas, and she would talk to me about it, whatever. And then she told Alice, like, yeah, I'm kind of thinking about this idea. It's like, oh, it's funny because I've been kind of pecking away at ourselves too. So then we all kind of got into this call, the two of them who went off with the idea. I just was like, I was just in there joking about it.
Yeah.
But they brought Monet. And myself, Monet, the fourth member of the Quad, and myself, and it was like, okay, we want to write this thing. The four of us just mesh in a way.
Yeah.
And the idea kind of formed out of our own banter, basically. What if we tried to write it together?
Wow.
And from there we started working, and it went surprisingly smooth. Like,
that's amazing.
Yeah, like I think we definitely had our first draft. I'm going to say within a month, but I don't actually, it's probably shorter than that.
Yeah.
So no, let's say a month, because we broke it up into like these different sections. And so, and I think we were still just meeting once a week, and we just did, okay, bring this, bring this, bring this, bring this. Within that first month we had a pilot.
That's incredible.
And it's, you know, as a person who's read a bunch of things and looked at it, as every writer knows and looks at it and goes, this thing sings.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's really, really good. We brought it into the Storytellers, and people were just dying laughing. And so, yeah, it's been one of the greatest like art experiences I think I've ever had.
That's super cool. So I used to write, my first 5 years of writing were spent with two co-writers, also comedy. We did like a thriller to start and then wrote three comedies together. And then, so comedy works great with a bunch of people because you're throwing out ideas, jokes. But because we had three, we had a tiebreaker, right? So like if two of us disagreed, then that third person got to say, no, we're going with this idea. So I'm really curious, because you have four, you have no tiebreaker. Do you guys get into those situations where it's like, we're not on the same page, or is it really going as smoothly as you claim?
Yeah, I don't think we've had a 2-2 situation.
Yeah.
I think we all, you know, if we have objections, we bring them up. and we'll talk about it and we'll go around. And, you know, sometimes people just step back and go, okay, well, it seems like the energy is this way. I think, yeah, most of it has just been like, it feels like the energy is kind of this way. I'll step back on this one. Yeah. Maybe I don't fully agree with this thing. There's a piece in it that I was like, that I wasn't completely sure on, because it's really, we are four different writers, right? Like, you know what the kind of stuff that I write is.
Yeah.
So yes, I'm always the person who's going to try and come up with something that's a little bit more out of the box. Kendra's a brilliant writer for drama, and she thrives a lot in that supernatural space. Alex has been killing these family driven pieces.
Cool.
And Monet has this great is it biopic? I always say biopic, but it's one biopic, word, so then it becomes biopic.
I don't know either.
That's gonna hurt my heart forever, because words
matter.
But she has that piece, but she's also like incredibly funny. Most of the things that I've seen her move towards have been a lot of these really comedy driven things. And if you just talk to her, she's like insanely funny. tons of hilarious quirkiness. So our brains see like how things work very differently.
That's super
a cool. lot of the times. But that's the thing about the quad, is that we became family in an unreal amount of time. And I don't think I've really experienced anything like that, where it's just like people that I've hardly known, I've connected with on that level, but there's people that I've known for a really long time that I can't connect with on that level. But the work isn't that difficult. There are times where one member really doesn't agree with something, but they're like, well, the vibe is kind of going this way. I'll just step back.
Yeah,
we'll see how it works in the end, and we'll come back around. And how does it feel at that point? And usually the sum of it is just you don't feel that part. And the installed thing that I was like, I wouldn't write that thing, and so I was like, I don't know. But when we put it into the session, we heard it out loud and saw people react to it. It killed.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, okay, yeah, like it's, you know, there's, it's a really great lesson in like, the world is bigger than you. So you have so many different brains. You just go, there's a lot of ways to be funny. There's no ultimate truth, right? Like there's a ton of different perspectives, and that's what makes the world so great.
Yeah. I think that's really key for collaboration. And I think it's why movie sets work so well. 'Cause I loved you going through each writer and talking about their strengths and their skill sets, because you kind of recognize and you respect everybody. And I think, you know, when you're on a film set, you've got this person does this and this is their specialty, and you know they're going to do better at that than anybody else on that film set. It's these clear lines. And I think with writer collaborators, a lot of times, I think what you don't want is writers who are just like you, because you want people coming with other ideas and bringing something to it. And you never want to think that you're the most talented writer in the group, right? Because that's going to cause division. So I love hearing you talk all about that. And this is a good segue for us too, because the other thing I loved you said is you weren't sure about an idea until you got it up on its feet and you guys performed it in the storytellers group and it clicked and you could see that. And I think this is such an important part of writing that writers don't do, which is the table reads. So I want to hear how storyteller sessions came together, and then and how you launched this and how it's going and all that.
Yeah, it came together through extreme loneliness and borderline depression. The world had shut down. My industry outside of film, which is like conventions, you know, large gatherings of people, was literally my job.
Right.
And so I was like, well, that's gone. And so I was like, so that was March that everything disappeared, and I was ramping up. I had a specific plan for the year of 2020. I was like, three shorts, pre-pro on my feature.
Yeah.
That's what's happening this year.
Yeah.
And I had a table read planned in March, and everything just perfect. I had a table read planned in March for my feature to kind of get us in the place. And I was, you know, inviting the investors and producers and different people that were going to help get this thing made. Again, it's very collaborative art. Mm-hmm. That didn't happen. Then I was like, okay, as we got closer to my birthday month, was in May, I started asking people to come. Can we do the table read virtually? Let's figure it out this other way. We did that one, which was a little bit before my birthday. I was like, can we do another one for my birthday? And then I just started like begging people, like, can we just, what if we just told stories? What if we got together and just like, give me your script and I'll get people to read it. I just need to be around other artists. It's very selfishly. I need your art to get through. And so I started to like kind of try to pull some things together and maneuver with people I knew in the Atlanta community. And one of the actors that were a part of it, Adetempo, who is great producer and a great actor. She was a regular on Black Lightning and whatnot. She was like, you make a group. And I was like, okay. Cause my brain doesn't work that way. I'm just like, I just want to do the thing. And this is going. She was like, make a group because she's smarter than I am. And so I was like, okay, I'll make a group. I made a group. She invited a bunch of people in and I was like, okay, yeah, we're looking for scripts to find actors for this thing. And that's Kendra and Monet, two people in the quad, were like the first two people to do it, right? And I didn't know how it was gonna be exactly, right? Because now I'm getting people who I haven't really read their work. So I'm not sure what the levels of the things are gonna be or how it's gonna be. And Kendra's piece, The Temple, came in. And like, it was so good. I was like leaning forward by the end of it. Like, and I'm reading it, I'm narrating it. And I'm like pushing through. And that final act, like, oh, this is what people say I should be writing. Like, like where you're trying to get to that final act, people are like flipping through the pages to get to the end. It's like, this is dope. And then Monet's piece came and it was, so hers, Kendra's was like a dramatic, supernatural dramatic piece. And Monet put this like web series comedic piece. Yeah. And we were cracking up on that too. And I was like, okay, this could be fun. And so from real quick, there,
what are the links of these? Like, some of these are features, some are shorts, some are pilots, whatever.
Yeah. So in the so the idea is, either shorts or web series or webisodes, and then features and TV pilots, or I guess TV episodes, really.
Cool.
But we've done some plays too, which is nice. Which is interesting, but primarily we're a screenwriter's haven, but we do create a space that that playwrights can have come in and taken advantage of as well. And it's just from that first read, getting two great writers in there to kind of got me in a place like, okay, this thing could be fun. Because the other thing of it is like, I want to get writers and actors of all different levels, right?
Yep.
And so the thing about trying to get actors, especially working actors, right? Like having Adetempo is great, but working writers and working actors are just more busy than other writers and actors. It's just the nature of it. It's even, especially what's happening right now, right? So people are just trying to figure out their stuff, but like the work has to be good on both sides so that to allow for the room for us to go higher.
Right.
And those first two pieces was like, oh, we've got the actors who were in there were like, okay, yeah, I can come back for this.
Cool.
And more often than not, we've had really strong writers who've done a lot of great, allowed for a lot of strong actors to come in and do work. But we've had it all the way from, we've had one writer who was writing their very first thing. Wow. We've had a bunch of writers bring their very first thing in. We had one writer who brought in the first three pages. It was after Rhea's like, would you guys maybe? I was like, hey, actor, did anyone want to stick around? And she literally formatted this herself and did it well, by the way.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. When was the last time you formatted a script yourself? Like actually did the index like, and all the stuff yourself.
Like in Word or something.
I've never done it.
Yeah.
I think I maybe tried to do it when I was like early high school. Right. Yeah. And we read that like, and she got a ton of notes. She got notes from one of our writers who works for a major screenwriting competition.
That's awesome.
So like that's the benefit, right? You have writers and actors and all these brains and we give notes and it's just so great. Last night, to kind of bring it full circle on the thing, Kendra was back in. She was the first writer, and then she was in last night, and she brought a revision of something that she wrote recently, a feature. And we were just all in there bawling our eyes out.
Wow.
And for multiple reasons, all right? Because the work was so strong that it hit us emotionally. But like the connection of all of us in the room together and the journey we've kind of been on together, that was hitting us emotionally as well.
Wow.
And yeah, it's just great. It's probably the most rewarding thing I think I've ever done.
That's cool. And so anybody can show up, right? They join the group and they can either have a script to enter or be an actor, or can anybody just hop on and give notes as well?
Yeah. Some of the notes are from actors who are like really fresh actors, and the notes are, that was really good. And those are good notes.
Yeah,
Continue to give us those. Cool. That was really good notes. And sometimes you get from really seasoned writers, just a list of like, okay, if you break up your action like this, it'll make it easier to get through the page. You want to balance your white space like this. You want to try and connect, get your payouts as far as like your act outs. You want to try to push us through to the next over the commercial break. You'll get very, very intense writer's notes as well. Cool. So it kind of depends on who's in the room at the time.
Yeah.
But you always get good feedback, and I'm always there and happy to give notes as well. So
that's awesome. Yeah. My favorite notes are from actors because they're not focusing on the entire story like the writer is. They're focusing on the one character. So they get to dive deep and they get to say, well, this character, you know, doesn't have the motivation you think they do in this scene, or this feels, you know, like you're forcing them to say this thing because you need them to say this thing. And I think those kind of notes from actors are really helpful. So I think it's a really cool group in that it mixes the writers and the actors in those worlds and elevates both, I'm assuming.
Yeah. One of our actors, Dom, she did write her first screenplay and brought it to us and got a ton of notes, and she's just excited to get back to on the page, which is just, it's always, yeah, I love this group a lot. But she's like hella insightful. Like she says stuff, like we'll go through and we'll have all these other notes, whatever, but she's like, this one thing, why would they do that? and we're like, ah, oh, shoot, no one thought of that.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's a real good mix of like, and sometimes people will invite people in and you get notes from those people as well. My favorite person to get notes from are people that don't know anything about anything. I always try to get, you know, it's hard to get someone who doesn't care at all or have no stakes to read a script for you. But like when you can, like, sure you want to make things for your peers, but ultimately your audience are going to not be made mostly of your peers.
Yeah.
So I always try to get feedback from people who aren't writers, who aren't actors, who aren't in the industry, because their feedback generally is like, this stuff doesn't make sense to me. Or it's like, oh, that was really cool. I like this was fun. Or, oh man, it was really cool when you did that one thing. It's like, okay, yes, you felt that. Or what did you pick up on, right? And we get some of that energy in the room too.
That's fantastic. Great advice. I love getting people that know nothing to read it, because they do really come with a unique perspective, because we're just so entrenched. We've got all the knowledge in our head. It's so hard to get outside of that. I wanted to ask why table reads and not for you in particular or for storytellers in particular, but for a writer, why is a table read important as opposed to just sending it to people and getting written notes?
Yeah, I mean, there's a ton of reasons for that, right? One, written notes, and I find this myself, and I've done this a bunch of times where I've read somebody's stuff, and then especially when it's a comedy, and I'm just like, I don't know, it's not funny, but I'm spending so much time trying to figure out what's wrong with it or what's right with it or what's the stuff.
Right.
But I'm not really in the jokes.
Yeah.
But when you're at a table read, the things sing. You're getting the rhythm. You're getting the energy of it. And you also, like, one, if you're a writer who's there for your table read, you're hearing all the stuff that doesn't work. And it's not the same as trying to get notes on it. Like, people will tell you stuff that's like, oh, well, the pacing is wrong. Script writers on Mystery Science Theater 3000 said, always look for opportunities. So when people give you a note, like whatever that is, there's value in that. But they don't solutions are almost always a mess. Like they don't know your story. So how could they possibly give you a solution? You have to find your solutions, but you should always be looking for opportunities. So when you get to listen to your script, when someone says, oh, the pacing is off, you go, oh, these two are talking a lot to each other. Right. Or I know I have a piece where someone dies at the end and someone's like, oh, it feels like their death is long. I was like, oh, does it? Then I listened to it. And I was like, yo, he's dying forever. Please just kill him already. Yeah. It just, when you hear it, you kind of get a feel for what your piece is.
Yeah.
And that'll help you as you go through and write things. And you'll get to know where your dialogue bumps or misses and rubs off on each other, because dialogue is a tricky thing for a lot of people. Yeah. So you want to get a chance to hear it where it's not just one person reading it back and forth to each other, and then you can kind of adjust from there. It gives you a lot more room to make your own adjustments, and then if you can get into a table read, you're going to get a lot more feedback because everybody has something to say generally.
Yeah, that's so good. How many of these have you done?
Now it's over 80.
Wow, that is so cool. So the thing I really wanted to ask, you've done 80 of these. What are the recurring notes that you see a lot that writers get? What are the things that, you know, early writers need to be looking out for, those typical stumbling blocks that a lot of writers do?
Yeah, so I mean, it's different from different people, right? Like if you get writer's notes, the most common thing you're going to get is questions about how you're utilizing your action. Huh. That tends to be what happens a lot, where it's like, oh, it either the stuff is really beautiful or it's just like these giant blocks. And I caution against, like, writer's notes are difficult right now because writers are writing for, if a writer's not signed or whatever, they're writing for competitions, they're writing for like cold pitching, getting queried out and whatever, just let me send your stuff, whatever. So it's not the same as like where you get to pitch. Cause when you get to pitch, that stuff isn't as important because you'll have a conversation with it, and a producer who you have a conversation with isn't reading and going, oh man, that thing is six lines. But competition people are given rules, and like they have an idea of how it's supposed to work. Yeah. And so the rules matter a little bit more in that space. Huh. But so yeah, what you get a lot from writers are things about that, whether or not characters disappearing is a thing that you'll hear a lot. Like, it's like, oh, like you brought this up and it never really came back around. That happens a lot in scripts. And yeah, give me more, I think, is a thing that comes a lot. Like if you're trying, especially in series, it feels like you're trying to be a little bit too cute, like hiding stuff and saving stuff for later.
Right.
But it doesn't give us enough in this pilot for me to really be invested. Those are things that tend to come up a lot.
Yeah.
These readings. Yeah.
That's awesome. I wanted to ask a question about, because we were in the same boat back in March of last year. We were about to take our movie on like a in-person tour. We were about to do a table read for the next film in front of investors, just like you were going to do. We had like a place booked where we were going to do kind of like a live table read of it and all this kind of stuff. And having to shut all that down was just really, really, really difficult. It was a big time of mourning. And now that I'm on this side of it, I feel like there are, you know, new opportunities came up. Like we ended up talking with a distribution company that we weren't talking with pre-COVID for our film. I think the timing of filming the next one obviously wouldn't have happened anyways had we had a successful pitch to investors. And so I'm curious for you, A, what that mourning period was like for you. And then B, with the hindsight, are you able to look back on it and be like, oh, well, no, we were able to, you know, put together this storytelling sessions, was able to put together this group that I'm writing with and loving. Has it ended up being a kind of positive year because of all that for you?
Yeah, I think I wouldn't trade, to answer your questions backwards, I guess. Yeah. I definitely wouldn't trade getting what I got in 2020 for what I planned for 2020. Yeah. There's nothing better than what's come. I couldn't have gotten anything better than what's come to me through storytellers. The relationships that I've been able to build out of it, like I said, two writing partnerships, and yeah, and just connecting to people in these very different ways. The mourning period for me was just, I think for a lot, I like a lot of writers got into this thing where I can't do this stuff and now I can't write. I have all this time, but that time became very heavy.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's like, oh, well, this isn't time I asked for.
Yeah.
So I don't want it. So yeah, I was really, really low for a stretch of it. And then I try to stay in touch with people on the project, whatever, you know, that's trying to hold on to investors during an economic crisis is its own journey. But yeah, but then, you know, that was early March, whatever. And by June, I'm thinking June 16th, I don't have it down in front of me, but the might've been like the first official storytellers one. Cool. So that's a pretty short span of time before I got to hear Kendra Monet's piece and go, oh, I think this is going to be okay.
Yeah.
And I didn't yet know what all that meant, but I knew that I was going to have something fulfilling for these stretches of time. And, you know, there's been a lot of conversations about whether or not I should charge for this type of a thing or whatever, so on and so forth. But like,
right.
I am charging. I'm being paid in the experiences and these connections. So
yeah,
so I'll, you know, so there's things that'll get figured out down the road as far as all that's concerned. But like, I don't think I ever want to ask people to have to pay to do this piece of it, because there's so many people that I've met through it that I wouldn't want to limit. I wouldn't want to miss out on an opportunity to meet the next person just because they saw I'm gonna have to put some down. Maybe I'll go buy myself a McRib.
I think that's a really cool perspective. And I think it speaks a lot to following the momentum of things. You know, I mean, it's a bit of a cliche of like, you know, closing a door or opening a door, closing a door, whatever. But there is something that, I mean, like you had this idea and you followed it. And then that became the thing that really fulfilled you. And I think chasing that stuff, first of all, being open enough to recognize those things and not being so self-absorbed that you don't see those opportunities, and then being able to chase them when they do happen. I think so often we get stuck on this picture of ourselves that we see our future. We're writers, right? So we write our own futures all the time. So we have a picture of what 2020 was going to look like, what 2021 was going to look like. And it didn't happen that way. And we had to learn to pivot. And I think learning how to pivot, learning how to follow those open doors is just infinitely important. It's really a skill set to learn, especially in this industry where things just change on a dime so quickly, and in any creative industry, to learning how to do that. So, all right. So we wrap these things up with the same five questions every time. Actually, before we do that, I'm curious, what's next for you? What are your plans for 2021? What's it going to look like? Hopefully it won't pivot in the same way, but yeah. But what do you got planned for this year?
Yeah, it's funny. Making plans is triggering now. I'm still working towards, it's funny because I told myself, okay, well, the plan for this year now is to get at least to do one short. And which would be my short Slaps, which I'm in love with, and then try to get back to that feature at the end of 2021.
Awesome.
But it's not as concrete as it was before because there's a lot of different things. Yeah, because 2020 happened, so things are shifted a little bit.
Yeah.
The main thing is to continue to build out storytellers. I'm launching panels for it. In a couple of weeks, so the 30th of March, 1st of April, getting different writers, TV writers and so on and so forth, and different actors and casting folk to try to add value back into that community. And then, yeah, and then continue writing with my writing partners, finish that slasher film I was telling you about.
Yeah.
Because as we got into these, writing all our other things, we kind of put the slasher on hold to build out the other piece. So finishing that slasher and then moving forward with the next thing that the quad is riding.
Cool. That's awesome, man. I'm so excited to hear about everything you're working on and how things have turned out for you. All right. So final five questions. What do you write?
I write perspective films.
What's your proudest accomplishment?
Storytellers, the storyteller sessions.
Cool. How do you define success?
To look at yourself and whether it be individual or larger goals, be excited about what you're doing and what you're planning to do next.
What writers do you most look up to and why?
The great cliche answer is Charlie Kaufman, who is definitely my favorite screenwriter.
Yeah.
And I just love, one, I love his brain, but I just love his conviction to say, no, I want to do it different.
Yeah, man, I watched, what's the one called that came out on Netflix this past year?
Oh, I'm thinking of Ending Things.
Yeah. Which is one of the most bizarre film experiences I've ever had, but that's exactly what it was, an experience. Like, how often do you get to have something so kind of out of body at a film experience? We're so used to all those, like you said, screenwriting notes, screenwriting rules that you have to follow, that he just breaks them all and still creates something so memorable and so kind of challenging, which is...
Not to take up too much more time, especially not talking about a person that I'm sure has been talked about. And he probably hasn't been talked about enough. We could always keep talking. His story is just really fascinating. You know, he goes through these films, and then he's like, okay, well now I'm going to direct my own things. And he does Schenectady, which is one of my favorite films.
Yeah.
And it's clearly not going to be a box office success. And he's literally having to figure out how to make his next project. And he got to make Anomalisa, which is beautiful and amazing. And then it brings him to this thing. But all of his, like, if you hear, like, when writers break down his work, like, he's really good at the rules. Mm-hmm. how he breaks down his stories and what is the structure for his stories. He's insanely good at structure.
Yeah,
he just also throws out, like, well, you need people to invest in this way and this way and this way. It's like, no, we could, I think there's another way.
Yeah.
When I think about adaptation, my favorite film of all time, of course, is Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. I'm obsessed with Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. I've watched it a billion times because what it says about love and romance, but, and people, but adaptation is literally, someone said, write a book about this story about flowers.
Right.
He did. And that's what he does.
Right.
And I just want so badly to say, hey, tell me a story about this, and for me to go, okay, I will.
Yeah.
I'm going to do it my way.
Yeah.
And that's just something I just admire so much.
That's awesome. Glad we went down that little path there. Final question. What advice would you give to your younger self?
That, it was okay when you were chubby. You can still swim with your shirt off. It's fine.
Awesome, man. So how can someone find more about you online, your writing, or sign up for a storyteller session?
Yeah. So you can find me at A Profound Dream. That's pretty much all of my stuff. So that's my Twitter. It's my Instagram. And you can find us at the storyteller sessions, or you can just email me, aprofounddream@gmail.com. And yes, if you're a writer, just put storyteller submission. Say, hey, I have this kind of a thing. Would that, you know, can we get it on the schedule? And if you're an actor, just put storyteller actor and tell me about yourself. We'll try and get you on there.
Cool, man. Well, this is one of my favorite conversations. This is really fun. Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure.
Thanks again to our listeners for tuning in and to our guest for his time and experience. Profound is doing some amazing work, so be sure to follow him on social media to stay up to date on his latest projects. If you'd like to submit your screenplay for a table read, or you'd like to participate as an actor with Storyteller Session, be sure to send an email to thestorytellersession@gmail.com. Link in the show notes. Lastly, be sure to check out our members group to collaborate with others, find your tribe, and take the first steps to making your hobby your career. Get your first week free at members.scriptblast.com. For more information about the members group, this podcast, or screenwriting in general, be sure to shoot Hudson an email at hudson@scriptblast.com. See you around.